Welcome to the Ask Sensei Tony podcast, where Sensei will address your questions about life from a cosmic perspective. Please subscribe and ask a question at AskSenseiTony.com to find out more about studying with Sensei privately, becoming a part of our spiritual community, and training to become a mindful minister of oneness in our seminary. We hope you enjoy this episode and find it helpful.
Hi everyone, I'm Sensei Tony. And today's question comes from Sharon. And Sharon asked, "Dear Sensei, what kinds of qualities should I look for in a partner?" Well, what is a partner? And I think a partner now has become more of a universal term that we use for a committed relationship. And, you know, it's a big subject and talking about all this stuff because there's so many different variables and things that have come into play in our culture as it's changed. So I'm gonna share with you first my own opinion and where I come out on this, and then that'll kind of help you understand where I come from in terms of choosing a partner. I think committed relationships are fundamental to a healthy society, and that they are crucial to healthy children. And that while I am very kind of old-fashioned in that sense about that commitment, the way and the dynamic by which contemporary couples play this out or live this out, I think is different. Than I can talk about that as well here in another talk. So I think it's critical. So what is a partner to me? So a partner is a term that basically comes out of, originally, it tended to come out of economic backgrounds. And so it was the idea that you would partner up with someone and that, you know, in a business, for example, that you would become partners. You know, and then also within sports, things of that nature, we talk about having a partner, you know, that we might team up with. And so partner seems to include the idea of working together towards some common goal or endeavor. And I honestly think the best relationships are not ones where, you know, here's you and here's your partner, that you're kind of just, you know, gazing at each other like this all the time. I think that's certainly important and appropriate. But I think the best partnerships are ones that kind of stand side by side, you know, holding hands and kind of looking towards a common endeavor, common ideals, common goals, etc. So I think a partnership is someone that you willingly and consensually and consciously enter into the agreement that, you know, you're gonna share your life together, and you're gonna share your path together, and that sharing will make you stronger. And I can tell you, as someone who's been with my wife, my partner, for the past 38 years, oh my, how I love her, and how grateful I am for our partnership. So it's so, so important. So what do you look for in a partner? So here are some characteristics that I think are very important. So, you know, I always say, no matter what you're talking about, no matter what area of life or discussion you're going to get into, I think it's really important to start with yourself, you know. If you're not practicing yourself, then there's no way you're going to really be able to be all you can be and live out your potential in other areas. People sometimes ask me, you know, what's my priority in terms of relationships? And I'm very clear about that. My number one priority is to my own practice. Because if I'm not practicing, I might not notice it, but everybody else will. Promise you. So the first commitment I have is to my personal practice, and my primary relationship is to my true self. My second commitment is to my spouse and to my son. My third commitment is to my friends and however I define the term extended family. And that would include my sangha as an individual, not necessarily sensei. And then my vocation. So it's a commitment to my own practice, my immediate partner and our son, my friends and extended family, and then my vocation. That has never led me wrong. My vocation is very important to me, and my vocation is definitely, you know, an expression of my true self, and very important to me. But I find that if that priority is messed up in any way, you're not going to have harmony. So what you want to look for in a partner is somebody who is either practicing self-awareness, and truly self-awareness, you know, because sometimes people that are spiritual can be flaky. And they're using their spiritual practice as a way of bypassing their own issues. And I don't care what spiritual tradition, faith tradition you're in. I've seen it in all of them. Practice should be really about integrating it in your daily life, not about peak experiences. And there's nothing wrong with peak experiences. I've had loads of them. And some people naturally have these more and some people don't. Doesn't matter. The quality of your practice is in the fruit that's produced. And so, to me, really working with your stuff is what's important. You know, because I've met a lot of people that have had big experiences and they're still assholes, being blunt. They haven't applied it at all to their individual lives and they've used it to avoid dealing with stuff. So that's number one. Now, you know, if you meet someone and they're not necessarily doing that now, that's part of what I think should be something as you develop a more, you know, serious connection, or, you know, you decide to date exclusively or you decide to, you know, get engaged, whatever the case may be. It's very critical at that time that you learn to have a common way to communicate. So, for example, in the four direction system of mindfulness, we teach that it's very important for people to have good communication. Because if you don't know how to communicate, you're going to have a lot of trouble. And so learning how to communicate and learning, you know, the model that we use, one of our mindfulness models tells us how to, or shows us how to understand how our ego has different ways of communicating, and that we really want to become aware of that and then, you know, make conscious decisions to communicate in a way that are mutually beneficial and enjoyable and productive. So that's critical. I'm going to go out on a limb and say this, and please don't hear this as like an absolute, because nothing I'm saying is anything other than my opinion, out of my experience and my understanding of Dharma and of oneness. But in my experience, as a pastoral counselor for the past 3 decades, I have found that if couples are having a difficult time getting along before they make a big commitment, it's not going to get better. It's not going to get easier. You know, and this is going to be hard for some people to hear, and certainly there are exceptions, and I'm sure you'll think you're the exception, but in my experience, if a relationship is difficult, it's like really hard, and that doesn't mean you won't have problems. Every relationship does. It doesn't mean you won't have arguments or disagreements. But I mean if it's a lot of work. A lot of work. Then it's probably not going to be very good. I'm sorry. So along with knowing how to communicate and the foundation of having a mindful type of practice, some practice of self-inquiry, there should be a kind of an ease that you get along pretty easily, and that there isn't a lot of strife and argumentation. I would say the other thing that's really important is that your types match up as much as possible. Now, when I say types, I'm talking about, you know, introversion, extroversion. I have found that when partners share versions, you know, we all have a little of both, you know, but we have orientations that, you know, are kind of more natural, or I would say like are more primary, and we have secondary ones. So like, for example, I'm primarily an introvert, believe it or not. My secondary energy is extroversion, but I've developed my extroversion and my comfort with that so that there's a great sense of balance. And the way that I know this is because when you use evaluation tools like the Jungian tool, Myers-Briggs personality types, or the Kersey-Bates version, you know, my numbers come out very close, but I still have a little bit of an edge on introversion. If my partner's an extrovert, well, that might be exciting in some sense because, you know, as a lover or an attraction, because they represent something that's very different from me in that sense. Wow. I got to tell you, from my experience, it's hard. Very hard. Because the introvert is going to have different desires and different ways of different needs than the extrovert. And so you got to share that. That makes it easier. Now, that being said, if your partner and you guys have, you know, good solid mindfulness foundation and you find you communicate very well, then, you know, and things are not hard, if things are easy, then, you know, you might be the exception. And that might, you know, might be working out okay for you. But you'll have to adjust. You know, if your partner's an extrovert, they're going to have to learn introverted qualities and vice versa in order to make that work. I think the other thing that's really important is that you share certain political and philosophical ideals. Now, that doesn't mean you have to agree exactly on political opinions, but you ought to have a pretty common sense of how you do things. You know, I think that if we're fair, good people of differing opinions, they kind of want the same thing, but they might have different ways of getting to it. And so that's cool. But it's easier when you share those things, and what you share in terms of your beliefs about family, what you believe about money, you know, what you believe about the meaning of life, things like that. It's really important that you have similarities there. The more differences you have, like I say, it might make interesting lovers or interesting friends. But partner, someone that you plan to spend your life with, it's a lot harder. I've been blessed with an incredible woman who is an incredible partner and parent. And every 5 years, we do a renewal of vow ceremony. Now, let me explain what I mean by that. I think every 5 years, couples should evaluate their relationship. I think they should recommit to the relationship. And, you know, if there's something not right, you know, if you got a daily practice, you're going to come up with those things anyhow, because I think that a really good practice for partners and families is to have a daily sort of, or a weekly check-in, at the very least, where you check in with each other and say, hey, is everything going okay? Everything all right with you? Everything's all right with me? Anything we need to talk about? You know, don't wait. Don't let things fester. Don't let things go. And nor do you have to get neurotically obsessed with stuff, but checking in with each other is very important. Having regular mindful meetings, and I'll talk about that in another discussion, but it's in my book, For Your Mind. But checking in with each other on a daily and weekly basis, and we do that. You can call them family meetings or whatever you want to call them, and it's very simple. You know, with my wife, I'll just say, hey, how are you? I know that maybe I may have said something or done something that maybe, you know, bothered you or hurt your feelings, and it wasn't my intention, but I want to understand. And most of the time she'll say, oh, everything's cool. But sometimes something isn't. And I have the same thing with her. And I also practice that with my son and have done so since he was very little. And it really is empowering when you really show how much you love the other person by caring about where they're at and having the willingness to gently confront issues that are coming up and not stuffing things and letting things stagnate and poison relationships. And it's a wonderful way to connect with each other. And when you have a common way of communicating, which we've also taught to our son, now he has it, then you understand you're on the same page. You know, so if I say something, that word and your word and mine are going to match. So we're not, you know, not running across points. And that's true in any kind of relationship. If you don't have a common language and you're not clear about the words that you're using and what the definitions are, it's very difficult to communicate well. So, Marcia, that's what I look for in a partner. I look for someone who is either on a path of self-reflection and practice or willing to do so. I would look for someone that being with them is easy and not a lot of work. I would make sure that you have good, strong communication skills and that you regularly, you know, daily or weekly, check in with each other to see how things are going. I think that you would look for someone who has a similar version in terms of introversion, extroversion, personality type. You would also look for someone who shares your ideals and beliefs about important things like money, faith, politics, things like that. And where you do differ, then you would be willing to develop those qualities in yourself so that there's a better balance. And finally, I want to say, you know, I don't care what kind of relationship you're in, but we're talking here, I'm assuming, like, about a committed partnership or marriage. That other person is going to balance you out. You know, you're going to have things that about you that are unique, and you're going to find that your partner has things about them that are unique, and that in many ways those two things find a harmony in each other. And I think it's very important when you start going about, you know, committing to someone and kind of partnering up, that you're also very clear about the roles that you're going to play in the relationship. So again, you know, if you reference other talks that I've given, you're going to really be very clear about the yang and the yin energy, the masculine and feminine roles. And you're going to find that you are going to balance each other out. So, like, for example, in my spouse and I, we have clear defined roles. Now, those roles can change, and we can talk about that, and we can alter them if we wish. But we define those roles so that there's an understanding and there's an expectation that the other person can have. And then also, it's kind of critical that when we're playing out that role, that we embrace that role, that we don't resent it. So, for example, I tend to be out there. You know, I've felt very, you know, if you've read my book, Oneness, Three Principles of Oneness, or you've read Free Your Mind, you know, my calling, I felt called by the universe to be a voice of bring together that which was separate into one, into whole, and help heal the suffering that's created by that. And I'm out there, and I enjoy it. Now, I was an introvert growing up, and my primary sort of orientation is introversion. So because I wanted to share this message, and I wanted to share this with people, I had to learn to be comfortable extrovert. So now I'm very comfortable. You know, I love talking in front of large groups, or, you know, be on the radio or being on television and talking to thousands and thousands of people. And I'm very comfortable with that. But I had to learn to do that. And my wife's not like that. You know, she doesn't like to be in the spotlight. She prefers to be behind the spotlight. And she's quite comfortable there, and she doesn't resent that at all. And so, you know, you kind of find how you are, and you that kind of works and fits. However, you don't want it ever to be resentment. So, like, for example, usually one partner kind of is kind of guides things, and the other partner kind of like shores things up. And in my wife and I, in our relationship, I'm kind of the guide. Like, I give most of the direction. Now, I don't do that by myself. I mean, we do that together as a partner. But I tend to have the, you know, the motivation and the place, you know, to kind of direct us where we're going to go next, what we're going to do, et cetera, et cetera. And then I talk to her about it and see if she feels in agreement with that. And we always do things when we're in agreement. We don't do that if we're not in agreement. And she enjoys being the foundation and shores things up. I'm a dreamer, and I have the dreamer's disease. And my wife is not a dreamer. So she really kind of grounds me and balances me. I don't know, honestly, without that grounding, that I would have been capable of creating and completing a lot of the things that I've done in my life, because I am a, you know, sort of a very big right brain kind of guy, and I have a tendency to kind of, you know, get big ideas and kind of go off in certain directions, and then, you know, I seek novelty and change, so I'm constantly, you know, I have to be involved in four or five things at a time. She grounds me, and she has this salt of the earth presence that, oh my God, is so important to me. And I think I've helped making her life, make her life exciting and never boring. I think the thing we always say is that no matter what's going on in our lives, she'll tell you it's never boring. So, but man, when a relationship is good, there's no sweeter way to spend your life. And as you get older, oh man, it's so nice to have someone that you share so many memories with, and you grow old together. It's such a, let's face it, nobody likes getting older. Not really. I mean, I think you can move from aging to saging, as I say, and you can develop that. But it's tough getting old. Life can be rough, you know. And, man, having somebody that loves you and is committed to you and is loyal to you, to walk that together, there's nothing like it. Nothing like it. And I'm not saying that individuals can't do that, perhaps by their commitment to a society or a commitment to a particular community. I'm sure they can. But it's important. So I wish you all the very best in finding a partner who's right for you. One last thing I want to say, though, is don't look for perfection. Now, if you study the four direction system of mindfulness, you know that one of the models we use is a mindfulness model called perfection and wholeness. And we make it very clear in there and suggest people really wrestle with the idea that perfection doesn't exist, and it never has existed, and it never will exist. And so you definitely don't want to project that onto your partner or have that expectation of them, because you're just setting yourself up for a fall if you do something like that. So I hope that is helpful to you, and I wish you the very best in finding that partner. And if I can be of more help to you, please let me know. Thank you.
You've been listening to Ask Sensei Tony. Please visit our website at AskSenseiTony.com, check out Sensei's books and videos, and become a part of the Dragonfly Spiritual Lifestyle.